Hello and welcome to The Laydown. My name is Ryan and oh my gosh, I'm so excited to share this interview with you. I got to chat with J. Ryan Straddle about his latest novel, Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. Let me tell you, this book made me cry so many times, like on the way to a book conference, sobbing in my car, had to turn it off so that I didn't get into an accident. It is beautiful. It is tender. It is complex. It is so lovely. I absolutely adored this book. And I think you should all read it. It is so wonderful. It's about family. It's about legacy. It's about food. And I devoured it. I loved it so much. And I had so much fun talking to J. Ryan Straddle about this book. You'll even hear in the interview that at the point where I thought we had to wrap up, he actually had more time to spare. So we got to just keep talking, which is what I always love to do. I love just having so much extra time with my authors. This interview was so much fun. J. Ryan Straddle is so sweet, and we had a blast chatting, so let's just jump into the interview. Hi, J. Ryan Straddle. How are you?
Hi, I'm excellent. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I am so excited. I love this book so much. I'll get into it in a minute, but you made me cry a whole bunch, so...
I cried while writing it a whole bunch. Yeah.
Can imagine.
I laughed a lot too. I think yes. It's my funniest and saddest book. Yeah.
Yes, I would agree with that. Let's start with, tell us a little bit about Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club.
Wow. At its most basic, it's the story of a restaurant that gets passed through four generations, and it's told from point of view characters in each of those generations. So it's a family story, a Midwestern, multi-generational family epic set in the world of delicious value-priced cuisine.
Yep.
Where, you know, like any story that takes place over almost 100 years, there's marriage, you know, death, loss, children being born. And since it's set in the Midwest, a lot of passive aggressive behavior, including a woman that sets the record for passive aggressive waiting at a
God,
church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. So, yeah, that was the first part I wrote. Like the funniest section of the book I started the marital chapters. I initially intended that to be the spine of the book, this standoff.
Interesting.
Where Florence, Muriel's mom, you know, expects Muriel to pick her up at church. And when Muriel doesn't show, just says, you know, I'm just going to wait here. And ends up waiting there 3 months for her daughter to pick her up. In the meantime, the community rallies around her and brings her food. And, you know, and Muriel's just like, okay, I'm definitely not picking her up now. You know, like this.
So stubborn. Exactly.
The stubbornness of these two women. And they're based on women I knew growing up in Minnesota. And, you know, for all their like skills and brilliance and complexity, I don't know. To me, that was just a wonderful place to start. And within that, there's a much larger story being told of this restaurant, of the people in it, of these families that intermarry with other restaurant families. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. And man, this book was so hard to write. I became a father for the first time while writing this book.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, he's three now. My son is three. It's dedicated to him.
Oh.
So there's just, yeah. So much personal. It's my most personal book, but
yeah,
also the book I wanted to read during the pandemic. I wrote it during the pandemic, and
wow.
I missed restaurants so much. I'm such a big food nut. And I was like, how about I just go to a restaurant every day in my imagination?
Oh, I love that. Just immerse yourself in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, this book is, it's fantastic. I mean, it's so, it's so complex, but yet so easy to read, and you just like fall in love with these characters, some of whom you want to strangle, but you still love them, much like family. But as I said earlier, so I was listening to the audiobook of this as I was driving to a book conference last week. And at one point I had to turn it off because I was ugly sobbing in my car. And I was like, I'm going to get in an accident if I don't turn this off. Like, I'll finish this later. You know, as someone who, you know, I am a parent, I have two girls who are, I have a 2 and a 5-year-old, you know, I have struggled with losses, and this book tackles some really difficult situations, and I just was like, this is so beautiful. But I want to say for future readers that it is handled with such care. You know, it's not a scenario in which, you know, you can tell it was shoehorned in for shock value or to move the plot along. Like, it's clear that these subjects are, they're very tender. They're handled with great care. So I just wanted to put that out there. It's beautifully done.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Talking about the structure, you know, I was going to ask, you said this was really difficult to write. Did you, so you had kind of the Muriel storyline as your initial spine. When you outlined, did you do it like chronologically? Like, did you do each storyline chronologically and then mix them all together? Or like, what was your process?
Yeah, I didn't outline before I started writing it.
Oh my
I'll never
gosh.
make that mistake again. But I did write each character's story completely
Okay.
and discreetly. So, for example, I started with Muriel. It's pretty rare for me to do this, but the first chapter you read is the first one I wrote.
Wow.
Yeah, that almost never happens. Usually I save the opening chapter for last when I write a novel,
Okay.
but this time it ended up being the first one.
Wow.
So I wrote all of Muriel's story. Then I wrote all of Florence's, then I wrote all of Ned's, then I wrote all of Julia's, and then I figured out how to put them together.
That's amazing. Was there a perspective that was your favorite to write?
Oh, wow. Great question. I really enjoyed writing Muriel because she's 80% my mom.
Nice.
And I got to, my mom passed away 18 years ago and never lived to see any of my books. And she wanted to be a novelist herself. And a lot of these themes of legacy and inheritance I bring up, especially with Julia, who's also, grappling with the legacy of a deceased parent.
Yeah.
I'm grappling with in writing Mariel, and
Yeah.
thinking about, I write in a lot of ways to keep my mom alive and to communicate with her, and Mariel was my character through which I did that. I also loved writing Florence. That character came to me like Athena out of my skull, fully grown and armed, ready for battle, and made it absolutely clear who she was and what her point of view was, and would wake me up in the middle of the night just shouting in my head and saying, like, you need to write this. I need to do this. Like, all right. I don't want to make you mad. Florence is not someone you want on your bad side, so you better do what she says. Yeah. Yeah. Like, Florence, that'll make you look bad. You don't want to do that. She's like, I'm going to do it.
I'm gonna
Who
do
are
it
you to tell
anyway.
me what to do? What do you know? Like, all right. Yeah. And so
Yeah.
she was fun. And Julia, my final character, was the most peaceful character I've ever written. She nonetheless also came out just fully formed. I knew exactly who she was and what her point of view was in the world. And the kind of difficulty she encountered in terms of trying to reconcile her family legacy with her own values.
Yeah, Julia's a really, I loved that, you know, she's got this legacy staring her in the face, and she's like,
Yeah,
you
I don't know
know,
about all that. Yeah.
I don't know if that's me, man.
Yeah.
Florence is such an interesting character to me because she's got this, you know, this really interesting, difficult past, this really kind of rough childhood that she had with her mom before her mom meets Floyd. And I was curious while listening to it, and it's possible that you touch on this and maybe I just missed it, but does Florence ever talk about her childhood with Mariel?
I don't think so.
Okay. I didn't think
I think
so
Mariel
either.
knows very little about it. Just whatever was
Yeah.
convenient for Florence to communicate, like via a lesson. Like Mariel does refer at one point to, my mother's many stories of her childhood privations. I think what Mariel knows about Florence's childhood is Florence telling stories like, Well, when I was a kid, I didn't get pancakes for breakfast. When I was a kid, they didn't have orange juice, you know, like automatically. Like, yeah. Or when I was a kid, we couldn't afford to eat out, you know, those kinds of stories. Yeah. That, so what Mariel knows about her mother's childhood is just what she's gleaned from these, like, yeah, these lessons, like, or these approbations. Yeah. Yeah.
You have it so good.
Right. You have it. You don't know how good you have it. Yeah. And Florence, of course, is this paranoid, overprotective mom who's like, Mariel can't play in the front yard because there's no curbs. You can't play in the backyard because there's bees, you know?
Yep.
Can't play in the garage because there's tools, you know? There's, just like that kind of parent who, like, when I'm at my worst, and as a parent, just overthinking everything and not letting a kid be a kid and make their own mistakes. Like, that's Florence. That was where Florence came from, was me thinking, like, oh, he fell down, I better run over and pick him up right away and make sure he's okay and kiss his boo-boo. And, you know, not thinking, like, you know what? They're going to have to learn to pick themselves up and, you know, just let them go. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway. Yeah. So Florence is, there are all these characters. Like, a lot of authors will say this. They're all me, but Florence is not the parts of me that I admire the most. Nonetheless, I wanted to do my best to show that even she's capable of change.
Right.
That, like, hey, don't count her out. You know, she can be a force for good too. Maybe it'll be on her terms, but she can be a force for good.
Yeah.
Anyone can. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a firecracker. She's an interesting lady. And I definitely saw, like, some of my family members in her. But yeah, I found that really interesting because I was like, you know, I feel like if she had just opened up to her daughter about her past, like, they, like, Mariel would have maybe given her some grace at times, but also I was like, that's Florence wouldn't have, though. She's like, nah.
Never in a million years.
Why do you need to hear about it?
Florence is not only not going to communicate about it to the people that matter, but she's not going to work on it either.
No.
You know, she's never going to see a therapist.
No.
Oh, God, no.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's not gonna... crazy.
No, right. PTSD, that's what soldiers have. Yeah. You know? Or she's not going to think about her own childhood as traumatic in a meaningful way to her.
No.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
But no, she's not going to describe it in those terms in a way that would be transformative to her. Like I said before, the privations of her childhood only exist to serve as lessons for her children in terms of their gratitude for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's one question that I was thinking about so deeply, and I'm curious what your answer is. If you could, because this book is very food based, obviously. So if you were to describe this book as a dish, what would you choose?
Oh, well, because it's Saturday night at a supper club, I'm going to have to say a prime rib platter.
Nice.
Yeah. As one character describes the prime rib platter, it's less a meal. It's more like a friendly opponent.
Incredible.
It's a lot. It takes on a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was,
it's a good value. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that answer. I was thinking about it and I was like, okay, I want something that's like, there's a variety of flavors. It's complex, but it fits together really well. You know, it's difficult to prepare, but ultimately delicious. It maybe will conjure up some memories or nostalgia or deep emotions. And so ultimately what I came down to was a very, very specific dish. And that is the plate of ratatouille served in the movie Ratatouille to the food critic. That is
awesome.
This book.
Awesome. Wow. Thank you. That's an honor.
You are so welcome. I know that you have a huge day of press ahead of you, so I won't keep you. But I just have to say, I'm so excited to hand sell this book. Your novel, Kitchens of the Great Midwest, was one of my first staff picks here. And so I'm delighted to be hand selling this one now.
Oh, excellent. Wow. Thank you. We can go over too, because I don't have another interview the hour. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. I hate to rush the authors. I'm always like, you probably have so much going on.
No, Luckily, this one is right before a break, and
Oh,
I don't need to go to the
awesome.
bathroom.
Oh,
Yeah.
fantastic. Well, in that case, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about Floyd and Archie, because
Oh, absolutely.
I think they're my favorite characters in the whole book. Their relationship just like made my heart ache so much. I love them so much. Could you talk just a little bit about writing them and what they mean to you?
I love them so much too. And it's the first time Florence encounters a loving relationship between two adults because that's not what her parents had. And she didn't get close enough to any other set of parents, as close as she got to Floyd and Archie, to witness that, witness like two adults who really love each other. And because of their sexuality, it's not something Florence understands completely at the time. She's a child, you know, there hasn't been any conversation about their sexuality other than like hushed rumors here and there. And so she doesn't understand it completely, but she does understand it on a human level, which is to say that she knows this is love and she envies it and admires it. And yet at the same time, I mean, when her mother gets involved with Floyd and Florence comes to understand that this is a relationship that has love and respect, and it's not going to be abusive like Betty Miller's relationship with Florence's father, Betty Miller's Florence's mom. It's nonetheless not the same kind of love that Floyd and Archie have, that there's a intimacy lacking, that there's a piece missing here. And Florence wrestles with whether or not she wants her mom to spend the rest of her life in that kind of relationship. You know, like this is her mom she's talking about. She's very protective of her mom. For a long time, it's been just the two of them on the road looking out for each other. And yeah, there comes a point in the story where Florence kind of has to choose over which relationship she'll preserve or fight for. Yeah, but nonetheless, I feel Floyd and Archie are a tremendous couple. And I think they did their best to live in the time they lived. Like, you know, and Archie knew that, hey, there's a better place for us to live. I know a place where we can move, where we'll be accepted, where we can, you know, live as we are in a community. And Floyd wasn't ready to do that, you know. So, yeah, it's, man, it was tough writing that relationship, knowing what was likely to happen in that place and time in northern Minnesota in the 1930s. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot going on up there. Like I said, like in the book, Al Capone used to go up there to hide out and like until the heat blew over on some kind of dalliance.
Amazing.
Yeah. He and other gangsters would frequent northern Minnesota and many of the lodges, like the Majestic Lodge. And so that realm was on there too. There was all kinds of counterculture and subcultures happening in this remote stretch of woods and lakes. And I feel like Floyd and Archie kind of fit into that in their own way and made a life there to the best of their ability. And, you know, because that wasn't talked about either any more than Florence talked about her past, Mariel also had only the vaguest understanding of it. Remember at one point in the book when Mariel puts a rainbow sticker on the door of her restaurant, she's thinking, oh, I wonder what Floyd would have thought of this. You know, like he probably wouldn't have approved. He was such a man of his time, you know. No idea. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If
Exactly.
only you
Exactly.
knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that Florence did everything in her power to like insert herself into their like she so desperately wanted to be around that, even if that wasn't like a conscious thing. She was like, well, she like saw Archie as a challenge. Like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
all right,
Yeah.
I'm
Because anyone that
break
liked her
ends with
too
you.
quickly, she was mistrustful of. Like, what do you want from me? Like, anyone that likes me, oh, no, they're out for something. They have an agenda. But someone that doesn't like me, oh, I'm going to get them to like me, you know?
We're
Yeah.
gonna be besties.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, that guy hates children? Yeah. Oh, God. He's going to like me. You just wait.
You
Yeah.
just wait. And
Yeah.
I just love that she was like sneaking off there to to have game nights with them.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
like
yeah.
this unconscious, like just surrounding herself with healthy relationships. Like,
exactly. Exactly.
She had no idea.
Which she's so badly needed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the
But
one
I'm so
healthy
glad she had
relationship
them.
she was ever around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so of course she's attracted to it, you know?
Yeah.
And also, you know, not to oversimplify her, but she's got father issues, and both of these men were father figures to her too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love them so much.
Oh yeah.
I also love the sort of rivalry between Jorby's and
Oh
the
yeah.
Lakeside. That was
Yeah, me too.
so much fun.
Yeah.
These like rival restaurants, and like the one is like all the fast food, and then the Lakeside's like good food. And
Oh, it's a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to write a character like Ned too, who's born into this legacy that he's just ill-equipped for.
Yeah.
Like
Oh, poor
he's
guy.
too nice to be a corporate shark and
Yeah.
like a capitalist restaurant chain. You know, he's just not in that mold. You
He has
know,
no idea what he's doing.
yeah, no
No
idea.
idea.
No idea. Like his favorite thing to do at work is to take fellow employees out to lunch, you know, all of whom are under him in the pecking order and can't say no. You know, do they want to go out for lunch with the executive vice president? I guess if he's paying, but
Sure.
awkward conversation. Like, is he going to fire me? You know,
Right,
like,
right.
yeah, he's not unaware of the power dynamic, but nonetheless, he's like, I want to get to know these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my
Yeah.
favorite thing. And he's, yeah, poor Ned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then his sister's like, I have
oh,
an
yeah.
idea to like make the chain better. And he's like, oh,
Oh, really? You know,
Wait, you think
but
that'll
you're
work?
younger and you're a girl. You can't possibly inherit this restaurant chain. Yeah. It's not how it's done. It's always been the oldest and the boy, the oldest boy. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, yeah. I think everyone gets what they deserve.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought that was really fun, and I love the kind of the way it's all kind of set up. Like it's this like idyllic like vacation spot, and you've got like, oh, we go up there every summer, and we work at this restaurant, we go to that lodge, and then like Jorby's comes along, like, hey,
Hey, what
idyllic
about
mountain
us?
spot, what's up? Have
Yeah.
some fast food. Like,
Yep. Hey, our steaks are $5 cheaper. Yeah. They're not as good, but they're better. Yeah. Better price. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know where I grew up in Hastings, Minnesota, when the Applebee's came to town, people literally said, we're a real town now.
Yeah.
You know, and the town was filled with
Yeah.
locally owned and operated restaurants that were better than Applebee's, if I may say so. And several of them went out of business in the subsequent years.
Yep.
And I thought, well, what a tragedy. I mean, now it's not a tragedy that a less expensive restaurant came in,
right.
You know, that people like.
Sure.
But it is a tragedy that it has to come at a cost like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Or when
Yeah.
it comes at a cost that they can't coexist in some communities.
Yeah.
That a chain coming in does mean the death knell for a livelihood somewhere else, because I don't know. I grew up in a small town where we could reach four separate clubs within about 20 minutes, and now only
Wow.
one still exists. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So this book is also kind of a clarion call to say, hey, if you have a separate club or a place like it in your community, go now.
Yeah.
Yeah, help them out while they're still around. Don't regret that you didn't when it's too late.
Right. It's so interesting the perspective shift that can happen as a young person. When I went to college up in the mountains, we had nothing except these itty bitty little locally owned restaurants, which now I'm like, that's amazing. And I still live close to there, so I get to frequent them very often, and they're all fine. But we used to say we would, you know, come down to the big city, which is not a city at all. But like, we would come down to the big city and we'd be like, ah, we're in civilization now. There's chain restaurants, right? There's a Walmart, there's a Target. Oh, civilization. And now working in an independent bookstore in that quote unquote city, I'm just like, man, I didn't know how good I had it up in the mountains with all these like little indie shops and restaurants. And like, now I'm desperately being like, please, people, shop local, please. Like,
Yeah, right.
it's, you know, it's like, until you live it and have that perspective shift. It's like, you just don't even think about it. You're just like, it becomes almost a joke or whatever of like, ah, like how convenient and cheap and it's great. And it's like, no, it's not.
I know. I had to go through the same transformation as a young fan of restaurants in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I loved Red Lobster, Ground Round, Perkins. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't eat out a lot. We were a working class family and eating out was always a special occasion. But nonetheless, like chains, great. I just love chains. You know, the reliability, the consistency. You could go to the same one in different cities and get the same food, you know? Yeah. I was actually really impressed the first time I went to a Bob Evans and had a meal, like straight out from under a heat lamp, like 2 minutes after I ordered it. I thought, the best. It doesn't get better than that. Look at that. I just saw that same plate under that heat lamp and now I have it. It's just like great. This future. Is the future. Yeah. Oh boy. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's also one reason I write to demonstrate that people are capable of change because they certainly are. It's been my experience.
Yeah.
Even a character absolutely. Like Florence, like I wrote her to say, you know, it's never too late to be a good parent.
Yeah.
Like even when it's on her own terms, like it always is with Florence, it's never too late to be the parent you need to be, you know, to be the parent your children need. Yep. Never too late. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, poor Florence. I know. I so understand her overprotectiveness. Obviously she's so extreme with it with Muriel as a kid, but you know, it's like I even was having a conversation this morning with my husband where my 2-year-old, her new favorite hiding spot is right behind one of our doors. So like she'll press herself up against a wall and hide behind the door in the office. And my husband's like, haha, isn't that cute? And I'm like, okay, but you need to teach her to never, ever, ever touch the part of the door that connects to the wall. And he like looked at me and I was like, can you imagine if she stuck her hand in there and then her sister barged in and slammed the door? And he was like, oh, I didn't even think of that. And I was like, my mind is always doing that. And I'm not going to, you know, stop her from hiding there, but I am going to teach her, hey, don't ever touch this part. It'll pinch your fingers.
Yeah.
That's where my brain always sees.
What's the worst case scenario?
The future. Yeah. What is the worst thing that could happen from this moment? Okay, let's prevent it.
Yeah.
Every time. That's just parental brain, I think. And it never
stops.
With
toddlers, like toddlers just seem to seek peril out. Oh my God. Like, what's the most dangerous thing I could do here? I know. Yeah. I'll find it for you.
Let me
like,
climb
if you don't
my
know
bookshelf.
It's dangerous. Yeah.
Why?
If you thought you childproofed a room, you're sorely mistaken. They'll find the one thing that you overlooked, or they'll find a way to make an undangerous thing dangerous. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's amazing.
God. Oh, look
they
at these
really
curtains.
Keep you on
Let
your
me
toes.
Yank
it's
on
just
them.
right. Exactly. That's a great example. It's just an eternal vigilance. Like you're just, yeah. It's like a bulb gets turned on in your heart that never turns off. You're just, there's the power that used to run to other things, other memories, other activities is now running full stop. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unattenuated. Yeah, to this bulb of vigilance in your heart. Yeah, it's amazing. I put a lot of that in my book too, obviously through Florence.
Yeah. And we both had pandemic babies, which is a whole nother layer of just difficulty.
Boy.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really fortunate in that when we did open, it was like I was able to bring, you know, my newborn strapped to me to the bookstore. So she was able to get some socially distant socialization at a very young age. Thank God, because I don't know what I would have done. I mean, my sister-in-law had a baby like 6 months or so before us. And they just couldn't go anywhere and couldn't do anything. They were his only socialization for the first like 2 years of his life.
It's so hard.
Woof. Rough.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think I do have to go now, but this has been a wonderful conversation.
It has been so lovely.
I could keep going. Yeah.
All day. Man. I mean, let me tell you, I'm going to
so many topics
the crap out of this.
Oh, thank you so much.
It has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with me.
Oh, what a pleasure. You're welcome. I'll come back anytime.
Wonderful. Have a
Yeah.
great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Huge thanks again to J. Ryan Straddle for joining me on the podcast. Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club is available now from Gibson's Bookstore, and you should all buy it because it's fantastic. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of the books we discussed in this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye.